Одесса? You're not finding what? Shlomo sent it in the WhatsApp group. Why does the WhatsApp help you? Oh. Mm-hmm. Are you on? Are you on? Where you what? I don't do anything.
Okay. Wait, sorry, 1 second. I'm just getting this in a second.
Okay, Gordina. Okay. Okay. Just a reminder for everybody as to who the board members are. We just decided to post them here. It will now be a test on who the board members are. Texans chief
Yes, Rabbi, they're going to play. They're playing now, I think, or they're going to play.
Do we have a score, Marsha?
No, not yet. I'm not sure what time they start.
Okay, well, in case there's any need for an update, we'll be sure.
Okay, yeah, somebody may. We need Castle here. He would have the update.
Mm-hmm. I think that's why he's not here, because he's busy.
Could be.
I think by definition, that's the issue.
Okay.
All right, Shlomo, are we ready to roll here? Hi, Patty. How are you feeling?
I don't know.
No, it's just I'm hearing it in stereo.
Oh.
Patty, is that you on the telephone?
Michelle is on the telephone.
So, you know, we're pretty progressive here at EDOS. If you wanted to sit next to your husband, we might even allow that.
I know.
Again, I'm not saying that if you're firmer than we are, it's okay. You know, we're open to all different strains of orthodoxy here at the East Denver Orthodox Synagogue.
That's right. That's why I joined.
Oh, good. I appreciate it. All right. Shlomo, should I start?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm having some connection issues. I'll be back.
Okay, so I'm going to start, and people will take my words for it. I wanted to talk a little bit today about the an interesting topic that comes up in this week's parsha. I'll just start off by saying that I will not be doing it justice, that really this should at least be a 2-3-part series if I wanted to really deal with this in a way that it should be dealt with. And that is the question of the 10 lost tribes. The 10 lost tribes happens to be an issue that has been studied and restudied by so many people. And the Library of Congress actually has a section, a number dedicated just to the study of the 10 lost tribes, because this is something that is interesting to many religious groups, even more so than the Jews. We start off with a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. The Mishnah says, the Aseres HaShvatim Einam Asidim Lachzor. The initial opinion is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, who says the 10 tribes are lost and we will never see them again. How do we know that? Well, that's actually in this week's Parsha. It says, what's going to happen? Vayashlichem al Eretz Acheres Kayom Hazeh. That it says in this week's Parsha, in the first of this week's Parshiot, that they will be sent off to another land, El Eretz Acheres, Kayom Hazeh, like today. So that pasuk doesn't make any sense whatsoever. How can a land be like a day? How can a place be like a time period? So the Gemara explains to us, Ma hayom halech ve'eno chozer, af heim hochem ve'enom chozrim. Just like once today is over, it's never coming back again. So too, the 10 tribes, once it's over for them, they're never coming back again. That is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Elezer understands the pasuk a different way. No, just like today. Just like the day becomes dark and then it becomes light again. So too, afasar sashvatim ya'afilu lahem, kach asidu lahoy lahem. Just like they are going to go and it's going to be dark for them. Eventually the light will shine on them again. So this is a machlokes in the Mishnah as to whether or not we will ever see the 10 tribes again. This is discussed in the Gemara as well. We try to get an understanding of ultimately when the Mashiach comes, will we be 12 tribes again or will we only be one tribe? The Gemara in Megillah tells us that there was a point where they came back. Just to do a little bit of Jewish history, there was a divide between the 10 tribes and the 2 tribes right after the death of Shlomo HaMelech. After Shlomo dies, his son Rehoboam was slated to take over. Rehoboam did not play his cards right at all, and therefore the majority of the country turned their back on him, and rather they followed the fellow Yeravam ben Nevat, rather than Rehoboam ben Shlomo. And with that, there was Jewish nation was fractured, and it remained that way for hundreds of years until eventually the king of Assyria came along, and he took the 10 tribes and he brought them out into Gaulis. They were sent out into exile, and it would seem never to be heard from again. After they went into Gaulis, there was a period of time where, in fact, a significant period of time, something around the century, where the southern kingdom, the kingdom of Yehuda, lived on. And then at that point, there was destruction of the first base of Mikdash, and the rest of Klal Yisrael went into Gaulis as well. This time not with Ashur, but rather with Bavel, who were the power at the time. If you look at number 3 on the source sheet, the source will tell us that in fact there was a point where Yirmiyahu was the Navi at the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Yirmiyahu went and he took over. He in fact went back to bring back the 10 tribes, and he was successful for some time. Now, there is a discussion in the Gemara, whatever became of these 10 tribes. Are they still around? Are they not around? If you look at the Gemara in Yevamos, the Gemara in Yevamos makes a very interesting statement. Of course, the opinion of Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Asi, Obe Kachavim Shekidosh Bezman Hazeh, Choshishin Lechidushin. If a non-Jew goes and marries a Jew, we're concerned that perhaps the couple is married. Why would that be? Why would that make any sense? A Jew and a non-Jew can't halachically get married. By choshish in the kedushin, why? Shema me'asars hashvatim hu. The Gemara is concerned that this supposed non-Jew is actually Jewish. Maybe he's one of the 10 lost tribes. Who knows where they are right now? So you see at least the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rav Asi is the Gemara is concerned that they are still around. How do we paskin? We have a machlokas in the Mishnah. On the one hand, Rabbi Akiva says they're lost, and Rabbi Eliezer disagrees. And machlokas in general between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer, we follow the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. The rule is halacha k'Rabbi Akiva mechaveiro v'lo mechaveirav. As long as it's Rabbi Akiva versus one person, we're going to follow Rabbi Akiva. It's against multiple people, we're going to follow the multiple people. Here, it's Rabbi Akiva versus one person. And therefore, it would seem that we halachically assume that the 10 tribes are not coming back. And we assume that Eretz Acher is Kayom Hazeh, just like today's gone and it's not coming back, so too they're gone and they're not coming back. The Rambam, however, in his Pirsha Mishnayos, tells us something very important. We know that there are general rules in terms of how of what we call Kholei Hapsak. Machokas between Abaye and Rava, we always follow Rava except for 6 cases, right? Machokas between Rav and Shmuel, so it depends whether it's Isser, whether it's Isser Heter or it's Dine Maminos, right? There's general rules. The Rambam tells us that only applies to halachic questions. Because the Rambam says, for example, Dor HaMabel, Elam Chayok Olam Hava, etc. Aser Shashvatim, Ein Asinim Lachsor Shnemar, Kavar Zachat Yor HaPamim Rabba, Shekol Machok, Shia Ben Chachomim, Shein Obo Lidei Maisa, Elo Shu Emunas Dover Bovad, Ein Tzav Lipso Kalocha Kiyachem Mehem. So we only paskin a shayru, we only decide that one is right and one is wrong when you have no choice. When there's something practical, when it's a halachic question, then you make the decision. However, something like this, which is purely a theoretical question, it's almost a philosophical question, right? It's a historic question, but it's not a halachic question. But in these cases, the Rambam says we don't paskin, the rules don't apply, and therefore we don't have to say we follow the opinion of Rabbi Akiva here and the 10 tribes are lost. But rather, we can assume like Rabbi Eliezer just as well. In fact, there's very good reason to follow Rabbi Eliezer because there seems to be multiple nevuas in Yechezkel which seem to point to the fact that, in fact, there will come a point in history when everyone will be back together. For example, if you look at number 6, the Psukim in Yechezkel, it says Yechezkel. Anyone who ever learned Yechezkel, Yechezkel has what a lot of case was called Poel Dimyon, that he is told by Hashem to not only give a nevuah but to act it out. So one of the examples is as follows: Da'aber lehem ko amar Hashem Elokim, ineya ani lokech etz Yosef asher biyad Ephraim v'shifte Yisrael chaverav. He said, I'm going to take 2 pieces of wood. On 1 piece of wood, I'm going to write on it Yosef and Ephraim. And the other one, it's going to represent all the other Shvatim. And on the other piece of wood, I'm going to write Yehuda. And I'm going to take the 2 pieces of wood and I'm going to merge them into 1 piece of wood. What's the indication? That Hashem is telling Yechezkel that there will come a time in history where the 2 halves of Israel will become a one again, that Israel will be of 12 Shvatim, not of 2 groups of Shvatim. That being the case, what does that seem to indicate? It seems to indicate from the Navi clearly that there is a Nevuah, that the 10 tribes will come back. Similarly, Yechezkel says elsewhere, Ko Amar Hashem in number 7, Elokim. By Zegvu Ashet is Nachalu as Haaretz, Rishnei Asar Shifte Yisrael, Yosef Chavalim. That ultimately there will come a time where there will be 12 Shvatim. I will redivide Israel into 12 portions. What's the simple understanding of that? The simple understanding of that, again, is that the 10 tribes are not lost. Right? We generally assume that Yechezkel, his nevuahs, are relating to the 3rd Beis HaMikdash. So since he's relating to the 3rd Beis HaMikdash, right, there will come a time when there'll be a 3rd Beis HaMikdash where there will be 12 tribes again. If there are going to be 12 tribes again, we have to assume that the 10 of the 12 are not lost. So in fact, it becomes very difficult. Not only do we say that, you know, there's a reason not to follow Rabbi Akiva, it becomes almost impossible to follow the opinion of Rabbi Akiva because Rabbi Akiva is going against Yechezkel Hanavi. And Rabbi Akiva might be very good against other Tanaim, but Rabbi Akiva cannot argue on a Nevuah. So much so, this becomes so difficult that the Abarbanel actually reinterprets Yechezkel to be talking about the 2nd Beis HaMikdash. Because if not, he says Rabbi Akiva just doesn't make any sense. However you're going to defend Rabbi Akiva, the bottom line is we don't follow the Abarbanel. We assume that Yechezkel is talking about the 3rd Beis HaMikdash in all of its discussion. So since he's talking about the 3rd Beis HaMikdash, it seems very clear that there's a strong reason why we would not follow Rabbi Akiva in this case, rather follow the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, and to turn around and say that there are, at this point, there we believe that the 10 tribes are not lost, and in fact they will come back. If you look at the Ran in number 8, the Ran explains, I says Shvatim Einam Asinu Lachzor, Nira Vade Shal Osa Ador Bo Vad Amru, Sheinam Asinu Lachzor. He said, in fact, the comment that the Gemara said, that the Mishnah makes, is that those will not come back, those 10 tribes. Right? Just to repeat, the 10 tribes disappeared around 100 years before the destruction of the first temple. And it was done by Sancheirev, who was the king of Assyria, of Ashur at the time. So in fact, the Ran says that even Rabbi Akiva doesn't really follow that opinion. And ultimately, we have reason to believe, and I would almost say that if we had to take a halachic stand on it, we assume that the 10 tribes are not lost. Now that, of course, leads to the discussion of, so where are they? We're not going to read through this, but I quote from you here one of the many books written on the topic entitled The 10 Lost Tribes. And he just has, there are so many opinions out there as who they are. I just put down 2 interesting pieces here. One, both of them related to the great United States of America. The first one was that there was an opinion out there that the Native Americans in the United States were actually one of the 10 lost tribes. This was a machlokas back in the 1770s. And among the great Bible scholars that wrote about this was Thomas Jefferson. So if you just take a look at the second, at the top paragraph, of course, not everyone in America agreed with the notion that 10 tribes were the ancestors of Native Americans. Thomas Jefferson, a biblical scholar in his own right, entered into the debate with his colleague Elias Boudinot over the issue. But the most prominent. More and more evidence based on the increasingly sophisticated and less passionate ethnography pointed to the simple reality the Indians were not Israelites. So that was one discussion, right? They found a mound in Philadelphia in 1772, right, that they thought was a work of the 10 tribes. The debate gradually dissipated as increasingly sophisticated archaeology and ethnographic research tied it to known Native American practices. That's one.
They did find a Milkic and a Fletcher tomahawk, though.
Right, they did that. And in fact, I think on this mound, there was an inscription, and it says something about days darker than we is, that there was some connection between Mel Brooks, I think, and the Indians. I'm not sure exactly what it was, Alex. Maybe you can enlighten us on this.
It said Lozum Gain, it said.
Lozum Gain! I believe that was the... They said, what would you do for this Torah? So that's one. Again, another interesting connection between the great United States of America and the 10 tribes came at the beginning of the 20th century. But there's a sort of Uziel Haga, right? Right? He is an interesting fellow. In 1900, President William McKinley gave Haga, an Orthodox Jew who was an Eastern European immigrant to Boston, permission to join the U.S. military and relief forces being sent to China. Haga claimed that he had proof, ready for this, that the 10 lost tribes of Israel were hiding there. He wanted a chance to find them. So this Meshuggah Yid traveled off to China with the blessing of President McKinley to try to find out who these people were. Right? What did he think? He says, over a year earlier, the militarized religious sect known as the Society of Righteous Harmonious Fists, I can't pronounce that in Chinese, had erupted in China, triggering a wave of anti-foreign, anti-Christian violence that sent shockwaves throughout the world. The mysterious boxers, poorly armed but fully motivated with fanatic zeal, killed about 230 foreigners, mostly missionaries, and tens of thousands of Chinese Christians. At the point of the peak of the rebellion, they invaded Beijing and deceived the foreign embassies quartered. The boxers believed themselves immune to Western weaponry and employed traditional martial arts. This is, of course, the famous Boxer Rebellion, when they tried to feed us Boxer on Tu B'Shvat. So, of course, these fellow Haga became very interested in this whole idea, and he believed that these boxers were, in fact, the descendants of the 10 tribes. And therefore, he decided he was going to go out there on behalf of the United States and be Makari of them. Believe it or not, McKinley bought into this. Skipping to the last part, the violence was put down by international force led by Britain, among them and a rather small U.S. contingent. Haga went with the Zara group. He tells us that he begged McKinley, sobbing in front of the president, he'd be allowed to go with the American ships. McKinley willingly equipped Haga with a special letter explaining his mission and even paying all of his expenses. So this guy convinced President McKinley that these guys must have been for the 10 lost tribes. Yeah, and you can read about it afterwards, a very fascinating discussion of it all. There is no shortage out there of discussions of who these 10 lost tribes are. These are but two of the stories that relate to our great country. The most famous of all stories that has to do with the 10 tribes is the story of Eldad Hadani. The story of Eldad Hadani, I'm not going to read it, but I give it to you in number 10 if anybody wants to read it on their own. This is a piece of it. Eldad Hadani was an Ethiopian fellow who showed up on the shores of Portugal and then Spain in the 13th century. And he told a fabulous tale. And the tale that he told was that he was one of the 10 lost tribes. He was a part of the tribe of Dan. And he told the story about the fact that they were the 10 lost tribes. take a little look at the Makoros, he says that they have the entire Tanakh. They're just missing Megillas Esther. Why are they missing Megillas Esther? Because it happened after they went into Golas. Lo Megillas Eicha. Also, they don't have Eicha because they were gone before the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. And they said, Chol HaTalmud Shem Ein Shum Chacham. They have the entire Gemara, but there's no rabbis there, but rather every single halacha says, Amr Yehoshua Mipi Moshe Mipi Agvura. Every halacha says, Yehoshua told us from Moshe Rabbeinu, told us from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This fellow, Elder Hadani, caused quite a stir. He published a book of his travels that was literally a bestseller in those days. It was it was a book that was very popular, and he became very popular with the locals there because these are tremendous stories that he told. Interestingly enough, Elder Hadani made his way into our Gemara. If you go to Chulin, Daf Beis Amud Aleph, Tosfos quotes him without even knowing it. Tosfos in number 11 has the Mishnah, first Mishnah in Chulin says, HaKoch Shochtin, everybody's allowed to be a Shochet. HaKol, that sounds even women. So can a woman be a Shochet? So what's the answer? So Tosfos says, even though it sounds from our Mishnah, yes, Kasus behilchus Eretz Yisrael, the Noshim lo Yishchetu. The Hilchus Eretz Yisrael said that women are not allowed to. Why? They should dat them kalos, because they're, you know, then they won't be so good at it. So he says, I don't know where they get that from, because even by a carbon, technically, a woman can shecht. So why can't the woman be a shochet? So there's an obvious question here. And that is, who is the Hilchus Eretz Yisrael? Who is this fellow? Why? What's Tosfos quoting here? We never heard of the Hilchus Eretz Yisrael. So the Mordechai lets us in on the secret. The Mordechai says, Kasser Rabbeinu Baruch, Isi Kasser Hilchus Shchita, Shevi Rebbe Eldad Ben Machri, Habami Aseres HaShvatim. He says, who is this? This is Eldad, the son of Machri, that is one of the 10 tribes. Who's that? That's clearly Eldad Hadani. Same Eldad. And he says, he wrote a sefer about Shechita. And he says, Amr Yeshua Mipi Moshe Mipi Agvura. As he says. He says, because they don't have anything else. Kol HaZaveh HaShem Ve'eino Yodei Hilcha Shechita Asur Recha Mishchitasa. If you shecht and you don't know the halachas, you can't eat the Shechita. Okay, that sounds good. Adam Yeshua kol tavach sheyishcho shchita sheino haguna bein bebehemet ochaya of pigol hu vo yeyocha vo yishcho ta sheyifne al hekt hakodesh chamakom tvira. Wait a second. What did he just say? He says you can't shecht unless you're facing the makom hamikdash. That you have to face towards the base hamikdash when you shecht. Is that a halacha? Did anyone ever hear that?
Sounds very Arab to me, very Muslim to me.
That is correct. Patty is absolutely right. That is the rule for halal meat. That's not the rule for Jewish meat. So in fact, it seems that he got confused here between the religions. And if you look at the last line in number 12 in the first paragraph, it says there, "Vashchita asura miyad isha," that a woman can't shecht. So Tosfos quotes this sefer; he thinks it's the real deal. But the Mordechai says this all looks like a fake. Doesn't sound like the real thing. Who is this guy? This halacha you've got to face towards Mecca. That's not Judaism. This guy's a fraud. And therefore, there was a major discussion whether we can believe this fellow at all. this Eldad Hadani, who shows up out of nowhere, tells unbelievable stories. He tells that yeah, he knows where Don is, he knows where Zvulun is, he knows where Yisachar is. He tells all these stories about where various where they are. They're in Africa, that's where they went, etc. And Tosfos clearly buys it. Tosfos says, you know, I got a question on this. It seems to be an odd shita, but it's more than just odd. This was a very contentious issue. What is the status of this Eldad Hadani fellow? If you look in the Shema Gadolim from the Chidah, he says that Rav Tzemach Gon Harishon, who's the son of Rav Paltoy Gon, gives a rundown of who this fellow is. That's what it is. And he says, "Ubesefer Eldad Hadani Yashan and Nifas beKushd beConstantinople." Rishonim Kadmonios, Yesh Chuvas Rav Tzemach Gon Al Asher Shaleu Imiyase Kedivrei Eldad Hadani V'mashachok Al HaTalmud. So they asked this Rav Tzemach, so tell us, do we follow this guy? Is he real? He's against the Gemara at times. He says, I have an older Masorah than you. My Masorah goes back to Yehoshua. It predates the Gemara. So he said that, you know, that he has no problem with this guy. He trusts this guy. Not everybody agreed at all. Look at the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra, who doesn't usually weigh in on these things, Ibn Ezra, number 14, he's in the middle of discussing something about motion, Tzipora. He says, "V'chal omer lacha." Let me tell you a general rule. Kol sefer shlo kasvu neviim o chachamim mipia kabbalah in lismach leah. Any book that wasn't written by somebody that we know where it comes from, don't follow it. V'avki yesh bo dvarim shemachishim adas nechona, particularly when it's wrong. V'kacha sefer zrubavel v'gam sefer eldad hadani v'adom elahem. So there are a few examples of this. For example, the sefer of Eldad Hadani, you cannot rely on it. So this Eldad Hadani guy is very questionable. Eldad Hadani showed up and he said, I am from the 10 tribes. And here's my story. And at the time, right, this was the time of the Rishonim. There were some Rishonim that accepted him and some Rishonim didn't accept him. They thought he was a total fraud. This was all a very cute story until a few years ago. Not that many years ago. Right in the 1980s, where all of a sudden the questions of the Ethiopians came up. The Ethiopians got up and said, we're the 10 lost tribes. And we are descendants, right, of that same group that Eldad Hadani spoke about. And therefore, we are Jewish and we'd like to come back to Israel. Would you mind giving us a ride? And we start with Operation Moses, followed by Operation Solomon, where we went and we flew the people out. And the question became, and the question remains a very real question today, what is the status of these people? These Ethiopians who claim to come from one of the 10 lost tribes, are you allowed to marry them? So there are a few levels of problem here. The first problem is, if you tell me that we follow Rabbi Akiva, that the 10 tribes are lost, that the pasuk in this week's Pasha, means that they're never coming back, obviously these people can't be descendants. Even if you tell me they are, that they're still around, I don't know if they're actually descendants of this Eldad Hadani group, and I don't know if Eldad Hadani was real. Right? You look at the Ibn Ezra, there's a lot of reasons to believe that this guy Eldad Hadani was a fraud. And what do we know about intermarriage over the last who knows how many centuries? Even since the time of Eldad Hadani, we're talking about over 700 years. At the time, the chief rabbi, at least chief Sfaradi rabbi, was Rav Avadya Yosef. And Rav Avadya, number 15, is going to be Inyan Ole Ethiopia, Hafarashim. What is the status? So he says as follows, my bottom line is Baha Saliknu Baha Nachisna the Lekal Mesh Basura Chitan Ba'abas Ethiopia Mutam Rav Bakal Yisrael Roshum Gir. Afilu Lachamra. Rav Avadya took the very surprising and controversial approach of saying that these people are undoubtedly Jewish. They do not need to convert. They can marry into the Jewish nation without any question.
What did he base that on?
He based it on the idea of believing that the group that Eldad Hadani was part of were undoubtedly Jewish, and accepting that these are descendants of that group. He was very much in the minority at the time, still is. If you look at, for example, the Tzitz Eliezer in number 16, or Reb Moshe Feinstein in number 17, they both raise a major issue. And the issue is, let's accept, which we're not really willing to do, but in arguendo, let's accept that these, in fact, are descendants of the Eldad Hadani group. And we'll accept the fact that the Eldad Hadani group was Jewish. And we'll accept the fact that the 10 tribes are coming back. So, yeah, I'll accept that all. Obviously, their traditions are very different than our traditions. And we run into a very serious problem as follows. In order for a Jewish couple to get married, it's not that tricky. As long as the man gives the woman an anything and says, "Will you marry me?" and she says yes, and you say that in front of two kosher witnesses, you're married. Pretty much any type of marriage ceremony that's out there works. It's tricky to come up with one that doesn't. It's quite different for divorce. A divorce requires a very specific document written in a very specific way, given over in a specific way. The marriage that was being performed by the Ethiopians, in all likelihood, was a good marriage. The divorce, in all likelihood, was not. Therefore, any product of the second marriage of these people that happened over the last few millennia, the kids were mamzerim, and that carried down all the way. And when you consider this, we're talking about a period of time, right? According to their count, right? We're talking about 2,500 years. That's around 100 generations. If any one of those generations on your mother's or father's side was the product of a second marriage, you're a mamzer. And there ain't nothing you can do about that. If you weren't Jewish, I could fix that. I do that on a pretty regular basis. You're a mamzer, there's nothing we can really do to help you. So they said that Rav Avadya is making more trouble than it's worth. Rav Avadya's assumptions, which are very, shall we say, novel assumptions, that they're Jewish, just really opens up the Pandora's box. Because if that's the case, we will never be able to marry into the Ethiopian community because the odds are overwhelming that they are mamzerim. As opposed to if we turn around and we say, well, let's assume they're not Jewish, they'd be in much better shape. So the Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Moshe Feinstein, both come out clearly and they say that the people are not Jewish, that Ethiopians are not Jewish, and they should be treated as such. And in fact, they point out that this is very much to their benefit. Because if they were Jewish, they'd be in much worse shape. The current approach of the Israeli rabbinate is not to require them to convert, but to encourage them to convert l'chumrah. What I've heard from non-reliable sources is that about 25% of the Ethiopians undergo a Geiros Lachumra. Now, of course, this leads to real problems. Just because the Rabbanut assumes they're Jewish, which is the Rabbanut approach, doesn't mean every rabbi follows that. For example, the Eda Charedis is following the majority opinion, which assumes they're not Jewish. And therefore, there was a major issue approximately a year ago where two Ethiopian workers in a winery were told by the Badats that they would have to transfer to working in the bottling plant after the wine was mevushal, and not beforehand, because as far as they're concerned, they're not Jewish. This, of course, led to a tremendous outcry that this is racism. But the truth, if you asked me, I don't think it's racism. I think it's actually normative halacha. I think that they had a very good point, and as a consumer of the wine, I'm probably glad they did it. What does Rav Schechter hold about this? So number 18, very interesting. Rav Schechter said that we've got a problem here because they might be Jewish, and if they're Jewish, they might very well be Mamzerim. So back in 1985, Rav Schechter wrote an article about this, and he wrote as follows. He says, for our purposes, this means that it would be necessary to consult an anthropologist to determine whether the first suffix in our sveik sveika, perhaps they are not Jews, is valid. Rav Schechter says, if we can go with the fact that they are maybe not Jews, and even if they're Jewish, maybe they're not mamzerim, then a sveik sveika by mamzerim, you're okay. So he said, we got to try to figure out, are they Jewish or not? If through known trends and statistical intermarriage and the like rendered the majority of Ethiopian Jews not Jewish, then our suffix is resolved, and so is our Mamzeris problem. If we can find out that they're probably not Jewish, we're in best shape. While they would not be Jews until their conversion, neither could they ever be Mamzerim. It's better to be a Goy than a Mamzer. If our research were to reveal that the majority are Jewish, then again our suffix is eliminated. We have only one suffix, and they are Mamzerim. So Schechter says, you got to try to figure it out. What are they? Only if the numbers are half and half, a most unlikely situation where the majority is impossible to determine, may we resort to the use of sveik sveika, the granting to Ethiopian Jewry of a full share in our heritage. This essay makes no pretensions to actual psak. For proud conclusions we reach, all the relevant facts would have to be determined and considered. That's the story. So Schechter said, you got to try to figure it out. That led Karen Bacon. People know who Karen Bacon is? Somebody. Shlomo.
She's the dean in YU.
Yeah,
she's the dean of YU.
Dean at Stern, no?
She was a dean at Stern when I was there.
That is correct. She was back at the dean of Stern in the 1800s when Merrill was there.
And thank now, you.
and now she is the dean, actually, both of Stern and YC. So Dean Bacon, right, actually has her degree in, Merrill, do you remember?
No, I don't know.
She has a PhD in biology from UCLA, and she decided to use her knowledge to actually answer Rav Schechter's question. So she actually did a genetic study of the Ethiopian Jews, the Falashim, or conversos, not conversos, okay, whatever.
Falashim isn't a nice term.
Right. What's the nice one?
It means outsider.
Right. So
they were always called outsiders because they weren't the Jewish ones, which you're saying aren't Jewish, but they were treated as Jews that they didn't.
They're Jewish enough for anti-Semitism.
There you go.
Right. You don't got to be so. Anti-Semites are very makel when it comes to deciding who's Jewish.
There you go.
A very broad take on it.
Yes.
So Dean Bacon actually did a study and compared them to, A, on the one hand, other Ashkenazi and Sephardi Jews, on the one hand, and on the other hand, to other African tribes to see genetically who are they most similar to. So in fact, he found out that they are far more similar to African tribes than they are to other Jews. So this observation in Sarkhan's early studies says that Ashkenazi and Sephardi Jews have remained largely isolated genetically from their non-Jewish hosts. Based on the biochemical genetic evidence, one can speculate that the Beta Israel are composed of significant numbers of African tribesmen who entered the community either through intermarriage or through non-halachic conversions. In either case, the first part of the fake sfeika that Rav Shechter presented has been resolved. The evidence that the Beta Israel may not be Jewish eliminates any possible concern of Mamzerus, and therefore by opens the door to their complete inclusion to the Jewish community. So basically, Dean Bacon did her study, and she said that good news, it would seem that they're probably not Jewish. At least the majority of them aren't Jewish. And based on that, we don't have to worry about this. Rav Shechter responded. Rav Shechter in the Sefer Mipnine Harav in Hebrew responds and writes, Kayotzim Zair should Dr. Bacon. That there's definitely certain genetic markers that point to all Jews in general.
Yeah, that's mitochondrial DNA.
Right. And that's, we'll leave that to our good friend Carl Skorecki to work on this better still. And he says, "V'hu rak nimsa ba'achuz namuch kmo etzol shar ha'umos sheba'afrika." And in fact, there's the DNA evidence points not towards, again, remember, this is long before Carl Skorecki's work was published, right? This is 25 years before Dr. Skorecki came out with his. So I doubt it's his mitochondrial DNA, but it's probably something along those lines. So some people argue, but Rav Soloveitchik says we don't follow science. Rav Shechter says baloney. So the person had no idea what he's talking about. Rav Soloveitchik undoubtedly would accept this. So in fact, this is as I said, this is something that deserves far more time than we gave it. On the one hand, we have here the discussion about the story about are the 10 tribes ever coming back. Then we have the question of who are the 10 tribes? What are the 10 tribes? Another huge, huge area to discuss. And then particularly the Ethiopians. Now, again, it's not just the Ethiopians anymore. There's now the B'nai Menashe from India as well, fall into the same category. But again, this is a significant discussion which has to be considered and it has to be understood. Right? The idea, just because the Rabbanut announced that the Ethiopians are Jewish, that was very much a minority opinion. It was just the opinion of Rav Avadya Yosef, not to downplay the importance of Rav Avadya, but Rav Avadya was lucky enough to be the chief rabbi at the time, so his vote was the vote that counted. But if we look at the other Rabbanim, Rav Shechter, for example, Rav Moshe Feinstein, for example, and the majority of modern-day poskim, the assumption is, A, the Ethiopians are not Jewish, and even if, and in fact, the fact that they're not Jewish is a kula, it's not a chumra, it's something that's actually very helpful to them in the long run. So again, with that, this is something, an interesting part of this week's Parsha.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, there's an awful lot more.
So this king was from Assyria or from Babylonia or
Assyria,
was part of
Assyria.
Assyria. Who was
his name was Sancheriv, and Sancheriv had what he did is when he took over a land, he would resettle the population.
Oh,
that's why he took the 10 tribes and put them someplace in what's known as Afriki. The Maharal writes that even though the word Afriki sounds a lot like a certain place where we might have guessed,
Africa.
Right. It's the Maharal holds that's not actually Africa. Oh. Even though the Eldar Hadani does sound that way. The whole story about the Sambatyon River, etc. These are all issues which we did not have time to touch on. But again, as I said, this is a very, very rich topic, which deserves more.
So this Assyrian king from the time of the first temple who resettled the 10 tribes.
Yes.
Is he related to the king from Hanukkah? Wasn't he an Assyrian, or that's an Assyrian Greek? It's a different.
That's a Greek.
Different family.
That's a different family, and it's also around off by around 500 years.
Just 500. Okay. Well, I didn't know if maybe they were still in existence and they were related, mishpacha or something.
I'm not sure. I don't think so. I think I think they're from Winnemucca. Not sure. All right.
Could be. Thank you, Rabbi.
Have a good Shabbos, everyone.
Thank you. You as well.
Thank you.
Shalom to everyone. Shalom. Okay,